Welcome back. It's a Wednesday, the 6th day of July, 2022. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and let's begin our look at what's happening around the nation and the world, and almost all of it, folks, is just plain unmistakably evil at this point, but you knew that, didn't you? With a segment I guess I'll have to call Doubling Down on Death and Destruction, starring who else? The Biden Fuhrer and those that are pulling his puppet strings. In retaliation, it says, for the Supreme Court actually reading the Constitution and deciding, hey, the EPA doesn't have the authority, only Congress does, and then only if it's actually enumerated, although the court didn't go that far. Anyway, the Supreme Court essentially limited the EPA and their ability to do things that they don't have the authority to do, and in particular, from forcibly shutting down America's fossil fuel industry, at least to the degree and pace at which this is currently happening. And as Natural News puts it, the Biden regime has therefore stepped into the gap and is threatening to close the nation's largest oil field. Yeah, you thought gas prices were high before? Wait, America, till we stick a fork in you. According to reports, the EPA is readying itself, the hell with the Supreme Court, to cite the Texas-based oil field, known as the Permian Basin, for supposedly violating ozone pollution standards. And that citation may very well be the move that drives a final nail in the coffin of America's last remaining traces of energy independence, which is exactly what the Biden regime and those pulling its strings have been determined to do since they stole the election. Quote, according to the Texas governor's office, the proposed regulations will directly affect the Permian Basin, largest oil field in the United States, accounting for some 95 million gallons of gasoline per day, or about 40% of all oil produced domestically, said one report about the threat from the regime. This would be just one more move from the bogus Biden Fuhrer to impact the lives and destroy the economic futures of every American by reducing the fuel supply even further and causing gas prices to soar well beyond their already hyperinflationary levels. A former EPA chief of staff, Mandy Gunasekera, told reporters this week that even though Americans are already paying the highest gas prices ever seen before in our nation's history, to the demise of many of them and their families, Team Biden continues to double down on their political commitment to, quote, end all fossil fuels. The unspoken commitment, obviously, and they're working even harder on this, end the once free United States. If this goes on, one thing you can count on, it's going to be a long, cold, deadly winter. Oh, yeah, and they do intend to disarm you, too. Any questions? Meanwhile, and yes, we talked about the Canadian Ministry of Health sick yesterday, and their intent to destroy the health of Canadians and make them all sick. Another piece from Natural News notes that Canada's already known for having some of the most draconian COVID-1984 vaccine mandates in the whole world, what with their communist Prime Minister Justin Trudeau blaming what he has called anti-vaxxer mobs for spreading the illness, when in fact, it's their mandates that are doing so. Now the decision to force the poison poke on so many Canadians is coming back to, well, not haunt them, because they're still doubling down, but statistics do show that fully vaccinated Canadians, and oh, they're going to change the definition there, remember, make up 9 out of every 10 COVID deaths in Canada over the past month. And guess what? 80% of those deaths are occurring in people who are even triple vaccinated. In a 5-week period between May 1st and June 5th, Canada saw 7,625 hospitalizations, supposedly due to the Booga Booga flu, COVID-1984. 6,560 of them were vaccinated. 4,590 of those were triple vaccinated. And according to the calculations of Exposed News, the vaccinated population made up 86% of all hospitalizations, 70% of them triple Zyklon B injected, while the unvaccinated population made up just 14% of hospitalizations. And what do you want to bet, folks? No doubt closely exposed to the walking petri dishes of vaccinated people who have become spike protein production factories. And similar statistics apply to actual deaths. And you know darn well, don't you, that the Canadian deathmongers aren't about to back off. No, they're going to double down and increase the mandates, because I guess it's not possible for too many good Canadians to keel over dead. Obviously, though, they intend to keep lying about it. Here's a quick related story, the kind of thing that neither Ministry of Truth in either country is about to let you know. The Epoch Times reports that COVID vaccines have increased the fetal abnormalities being recorded by doctors 100-fold. And I guess that's among those that survive. And when it comes to doubling down, folks, it's pretty tough to top the latest example of why gun control only works in one way, to increase the ability of wannabe mass murderers to execute their victims with impunity. It certainly worked for Mao, Stalin, and Hitler, And those with eyes to see are hard-pressed not to recognize how well it's working in the gun-free killing zones of most of far-left communist progressive cesspool city America. It helps to have the FBI and the Biden regime on your team, too, obviously, and the left-stream media to run interference. For example, here's a piece from the Gateway Pundit, not among those that are far left. On Monday, the 4th of July, Bobby Crimo, or is it Cremo? Anyway, the guy who shot and killed all those people in the gun-free killing zone suburb of Highland Park outside Chicago, injuring a whole lot of others, was immediately labeled by the mainstream media as a right-wing extremist, despite volumes of evidence to the contrary. They even include a video from a local news channel in Chicago claiming Cremo was connected to, quote, a far-right overseas group, more likely over-the-swamp group. But even though a lot of it's been scrubbed from the web, thank you, socialist media platforms, it's clear that Cremo, they note, was aligned with progressives, socialists, and Antifa. And once again, they provide volumes of information to make that point. This, says TGP, is what the media didn't want you to see. Additionally, law enforcement had visited Cremo, and yet when the media reported, erroneously it seems, about ties to Trump, they remained silent, because they knew a lot more about Cremo than was initially reported. They were at his home twice, once to confiscate 16 knives, a dagger, and a sword, and still, somehow, he was able to purchase 5 firearms in the gun control mecca of Chicagoland, Illinois. And a copy of his Twitter account, which was saved before being taken down, clearly shows just how far left Cremo was, pushing far left publications and far left politicians like the infamous Barack Hussein, Barry Sotero, Sabarco, Obama. No, he's not at all far right. In fact, I kind of thought Frank Maine's characterization via the Burning platform was apropos, who wrote that he's virtually a poster child for the CIA's MKUltra Monarch mind control program, and that's why they selected, quote, an obviously mentally ill, emotionally disturbed, drug-addled 21-year-old white man with an established history of preoccupation with violence and mayhem. Probably a whole lot of drugs, too, prescription and not. Now, I guess after those observations, folks, it's time for your host to stop and take a minute or so to do a bit of commentary, because obviously there are a lot of things here that we're being lied to about, a whole lot of things that we'd like to know, like exactly what prescription drugs, Luvox, Prozac, other SSRIs, aka mass murder and suicide drugs, oh, a whole lot of things that are possibilities, and I guarantee you the media is not about to look into those with the same zeal that they try to pin it all on the type of firearm that this guy used. And I'm sick and tired of hearing the unmitigated BS about how powerful the gun lobby is. After every single one of these more than suspicious looking false flags, and every single one of them in a gun-free killing zone, is ban guns, ban guns, ban guns. You want to see the real powerful agents at work here? Look at what you're not hearing, not allowed to hear. What's being controlled so that you don't even get to ask the question. Ask yourself why there's not even discussion about the kinds of SSRI or other mind-control drugs these mass-murdering psychopaths were taking. And who knew about them? Who's been grooming them? There's your real puppet masters. Oh, yeah, and was he vaccinated? Guess what? Looks like this guy's socialist media platform shows he was a big fan of the poison poke. Nobody finds that a bit unusual, or maybe it's just par for the course, since he's clearly been drinking all the other waystream Kool-Aid. But it does point out an interesting connection that your host finds kind of fascinating. I don't claim to know the motivation of a leftist rapper who decides to kill a whole lot of people and try to be even bigger and badder like his heroes, nor do I know what motivates those who produce the poison poke and try to force it literally into the bloodstreams of hundreds of millions, if not billions, of people. Although clearly money, power, and the desire to commit mass murder are a common thread here. Call it a satanic influence if you understand what's really going on. But one thing is a clear common denominator, whether we're talking about mass murder by firearms or mass murder by Zyklon B injection, the great big stinking fetid lies. In both cases, they're lying about the cause, the effects, and certainly the statistics. You want to live? Well, the poison poke is far, far more likely to kill you than the booga booga flu. And you're far, far more likely to end up dead if you spend a lot of time in gun-free killing zones than if you live in rural America and have an AR-15 on the shelf and a Glock 21 in your nightstand with a couple of extra standard capacity magazines. Although the leftist press lies about that too. Because see, folks, unlike an mRNA injection to modify your DNA, The AR-15 won't rise up and kill you or stop your heart in the middle of the night or even while you're trying to work out. But come to think of it, and here's a precautionary tale, if you've been taking a bunch of SSRIs, especially for a long time, and all of a sudden, because of, say, Biden's supply chain failure or a power grid failure or some other reason that you can't get a hold of whatever drugs it is that manage to keep you from killing yourself and others on a daily basis, suddenly you're jonesing for them and going cold turkey? Yeah, you probably will, whether you realize it or not, manage to find a way to kill yourself and maybe a whole lot of people along with you, whether you've got a gun at hand or not. And that, too, is a far bigger issue than you're being told. So let me just throw it out there and call it yet another word of the wise. Do you think the Biden regime might have some plans in that direction? Shortage of baby formula? No big deal. Shortage of Pampers or feminine hygiene products? Oh, we can survive that. A shortage of Prozac and Luvox on a massive nationwide basis? Food for thought. Let's turn next to Europe for a couple of stories, basically showing that, no, the attempt to destroy the food supply chain isn't limited to America alone. European tyrants are anxious to subject their peons to a famine as well. And in a demonstration that sounds eerily familiar to what Canadian truckers tried to do in response to the attempt to inject them with poisons and mandate that unless they do so, they can't even earn a living. Dutch farmers, too, have taken their protest to the next level. And no, it's not just the American EPA being used as a weapon against the world. Dutch farmers, says Zero Hedges Coverage, are livid over government plans to allegedly cut nitrogen emissions. And here you thought carbon dioxide was the only deadly thing that plants needed to survive. By 50 to 95%, huh? What's the point of that? Well, it doesn't matter, folks. It will end up in the same place. Death for a whole lot of people, and as it turns out, livestock, too. Anyway, Dutch farmers have now taken to blocking food distribution centers in protest of the plan. They also put a bunch of manure at the border, a plan which would shutter an estimated one-third of all farms in the Netherlands and cut down on livestock herds, too, by a similar ratio. Kent Knightley at offguardian.org summarizes the background this way, noting that this week tens of thousands of farmers in the Netherlands have gathered from all across the country to protest Big Brother policies, which would intend to reduce the number of livestock in the country by up to a third. And in a typical example of media weasel wording, the press reports on all of this headline something like, Dutch farmers protest emissions targets. But this, of course, is a massive lie by omission. The government policy actually being protested, he writes, is a 25 billion euro investment in, supposedly anyway, quote, reducing levels of nitrogen pollution. But it plans to achieve this, among other things, by paying some Dutch livestock farmers to relocate or exit the industry. Others, of course, will be forced out. And in reality, this means reducing the number of pigs, chickens, and cows by about 30%. And that, says Knightley, is what's really being protested here, a deliberate shrinking of the farming sector, impacting the livelihood of thousands of farmers and the food supply of literally hundreds of millions of people. Remember the Klaus Schwab und Soros promise? You'll eat bugs and you'll like it? Because, really, you won't have any choice? Yeah, it's not hard to see that the real goal here is to create an ongoing food crisis. Because the Netherlands produces a massive food surplus and is, in fact, one of the biggest exporters of meat in the world and the largest in Europe. So reducing its output by a full third could have huge implications for the global food supply, no doubt, folks, as intended, especially for Western Europe. And perhaps more troubling, writes the author, is how all of this could, and certainly is intended, to act as a precedent. This isn't the first pay farmers not to farm scheme launched over the last year. Both the UK and, of course, Big Brother in the US have put such schemes in place. But a government paying to reduce its own meat production? That's a first. It's almost as crazy as refusing new oil and gas leases while the cost of petrol is going through the roof. Indeed, you might think that in a world beset by a shortage of fertilizer due to sanctions against Russia and Belarus, it might be almost mad, or maybe beyond mad, to complain about a surplus of manure, let alone try to reduce it. So, obviously, we're well beyond the point where any of this could be considered accidental now, aren't we? Put it this way, says Kit Knightley, if the collectivist governments of the Western world were in fact trying to impoverish and starve their own citizens, what, if anything, would they actually be doing any differently? A couple of brief updates next on the farm situation from around the country. 25 tractors or so were parked outside a distribution center just north of Amsterdam, donning banners which read, Our Farmers, Our Future, among other slogans. Fishermen of the country began blockading ports in solidarity with the farmers. The strike has sparked fears of supermarket food shortages, and rightfully so, but hey, those are only a harbinger of what the Big Brother government there intends to bring on later. Undercover cops tried to infiltrate the Dutch farmer protest, but they got caught, outed, and ousted over the weekend. Over the weekend, other farmers poured manure on government offices in protest. In the town of Lockham, farmers sprayed the town hall with liquid manure. They called it giving town hall a healthy dose of their own horseshit. While in Eindhoven, thousands of citizens joined the farmers' protest. While at the Schiphol airport near Amsterdam, the Dutch regime desperately positioned military units in anticipation of farm protests. But as some of the coverage wrote, it's not going to be enough. Dutch people are waking up. No great reset here. No build back better. No agenda 2030. And as we saw in Canada, Big Brother is intent to escalate things. A story from the Gateway Pundit, dated early Wednesday morning, said that Dutch police have opened fire on a 16-year-old farm boy and aimed guns at farmers as mass protests are shutting down the plans for the globalist great reset. Can't have that. Zero Hedge reported that Tuesday evening, during a farmers' protest near the town of Heerenveen, police fired warning shots. No one was injured, but a tractor was hit. Three people there were arrested. Later, police began violently pulling down blockades one by one using something called Romeos. As one commentator put it, it's basically police-sanctioned Antifa. But hey, this is Klaus Schwab country, after all. All of which resulted in farmers escalating to the next level as well, deploying, get this folks, a tank against the green government scheme to reduce nitrogen in fertilizer. And presumably, it's going to be used to block food distribution centers following the use of tractors for that same purpose earlier in the week. You know they're going to be talking both tank control and tractor control next, don't you? The stories and updates continue. Other videos, says TGP's coverage, show police officers sick, stopping civilian cars with guns drawn. And if you watched in Canada, you can pretty well guess where this ends. Also from Europe, although it's probably the same general theme, this comes from Paul Joseph Watson in Summit News. From today, he writes, all new vehicles sold in the European Union, Achtung, will have mandatory black boxes fitted in them that record technical data and will, of course, be accessible by authorities, greasing the skids not only for things that are already in plan and pretty much in play, like remote shutdown, but surveillance-powered speed-limiting technology, too. And while for the time being, drivers can opt out of using the feature, you know darn well there's a back door, and they won't be able to do that for very long. Privacy advocates, he writes, fear that the technology will become mandatory. And that's kind of obvious as a nose on your face now, isn't it? Back in 2019, he notes the European Transport Safety Council, how's that for a whopper, announced that July 6th, today, would mark the day when all car manufacturers would be forced to fit new models with a system that keeps track of all data that Big Brother wants to know, including speed, braking, steering wheel angle, incline of the road, and whether the vehicle's various safety features were operational or disabled, starting with seat belts. What do you bet they're listening to conversations, too? From there, let's talk a bit about the state of the police state in America, starting with the People's Republic of California and the southern enclave of San Diego, which, says Zero Hedge, has now lost fully 22%, call it almost a quarter, of their police force due to, what else, the Zyklon B injection mandates. This is the largest exodus of police officers from the city since 2009, and the majority of them, says the piece, are quitting because of the city's continued obsession with booga, 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 COVID-19 mandates. Perhaps, as the story, the smartest move the people of L.A. County ever made was to elect Sheriff Alex Villanueva, who refused to enforce those unconstitutional vax mandates, and that decision probably saved them from also losing a quarter or more of their law enforcement officers within the Sheriff's Department. Contrast that with LAPD, which wasn't so lucky or so forgiving. Officers quit in droves or were fired, what with over 2,200 employees refusing to comply with the poison poke, which has been a repeating situation across California, and San Diego is now the latest region to suffer considerable losses of LEOs over the literally unconscionable bodily invasion known as a vaccine mandate. More than 230 San Diego PD officers have left this fiscal year alone. Meanwhile, city officials are scrambling to increase incentives. Oh, yes, would you like to take a poison poke? We'll pay a fraction of your medical bills. Well, no, they want to approve a 10% pay raise, which won't even begin to cover your medical bills or your health impacts. But many within the department were well aware that this outcome was looming. And now officials are saying that replacing deputies as fast as they leave will, in fact, be impossible. And as you might suspect, the lack of officers has led to horrendous wait times for things like emergencies, according to anonymous SPD officers and, of course, people who dial 911 and then wait to die. Meanwhile, though, on the other side of the coin, John W. Whitehead, this time via the Burning Platform, has a piece up about rogue cops and notes that the Supreme Court, in contrast to some other things that might be moving in the right direction, are trying to turn America into a constitution-free zone when it comes to the police state. They've spoken, he says. There'll be no consequences for cops who brutalize the citizenry and no justice for victims of police brutality. And although the court's rulings over the last year and a half or so on qualified immunity for police who engage in all kinds of official misconduct were largely overshadowed of late by politically polarizing rulings on things like abortion, gun ownership, and religion, they were no less devastating because the doctrine of qualified immunity was intended to insulate government officials from frivolous lawsuits, which sounds like a noble goal, but the real purpose of qualified immunity is to ensure that government officials, regardless of culpability for evil, and we've seen that writ large lately now, haven't we, are not held accountable for official misconduct. He cites several cases here, starting with Egbert v. Bull, in which the court gave total immunity to Border Patrol agents who beat up a bed and breakfast owner in the process of carrying out a massive exception to the Fourth Amendment for Border Police, and by extension, other federal police, who unconstitutionally use excessive force. As journalist Ian Milheiser concludes, Egbert v. Bull is a severe blow to the proposition that law enforcement must actually obey the Constitution. In Cope v. Cogdill, court let stand a Fifth Circuit court ruling that granted qualified immunity to jail officials who watched a suicidal inmate strangle himself without intervening or even calling for help. Likewise, in Ramirez v. Guadarrama, the court let stand a lower court ruling granting qualified immunity to police officers who fired their tasers at a suicidal man who had actually doused himself in gasoline, thus causing him to burst into flame. Both Cope and Ramirez moved the goalpost, writes Whitehead, for the police state and the kind of misconduct that merits qualified immunity, suggesting that even sheer incompetence is now excusable when it involves a cop. How long until we're seeing the same thing if they've got a white smock on, folks?
Coercing and injecting people against their will.
It's a chilling reminder, says Whitehead, that in the American police state, we the people are at the mercy of law enforcement officers who have almost absolute discretion to decide who's a threat, what constitutes resistance, and you can guess that's a pretty low bar, and just how harshly they can deal with any citizenry that they were once at least appointed to serve and protect. And this, he says, is how unarmed Americans just keep dying at the hands of an increasingly militarized police.
And you can guess what that means as they move to continue the disarmament of the American people. Qualified immunity, writes John W. Whitehead, is how the police state stays in power. And although, he says, back in the 1982 case of Harlow v. Fitzgerald, the court recognized that suing government officials for monetary damages is, quote, the only realistic avenue of holding them accountable for abusing their offices and violating the Constitution, it has also ostensibly given the police and other government agents a green light to shoot first and ask questions later, as well as to probe, poke, pinch, taser, search, strip, and generally manhandle anyone they see fit to in almost any circumstance, all with the general blessing of the courts. Indeed, he notes, as Reuters has reported, qualified immunity, quote, has become a nearly fail-safe tool to let police brutality go unpunished and to deny victims their constitutional rights. And worse, as Reuters concluded, the Supreme Court has built qualified immunity into an often insurmountable police defense by intervening in cases mostly to favor the police. They can forcibly take DNA, stop cars based on anonymous tips, arrest and search without any probable cause, break into homes without a warrant, even if it's the wrong house, carry out no-knock raids if they think there might be a danger, at least to themselves, by honoring their oath. Of course, if it's a school shooting, it's a whole different deal, isn't it? Because the system is rigged, concludes John W. Whitehead, because the government is hopelessly corrupt and the Supreme Court has consistently chosen to protect police at the expense of the people, we're dealing with a nationwide epidemic of court-sanctioned police violence carried out with total impunity against individuals actually posing little or no threat, especially once they're completely disarmed. There's a pattern here, folks, and we're running out of time to not only recognize it, but start to reverse it. Thanks for joining us, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.